Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win, exploring ideas to enhancing national competitiveness. My guest today is David Walker, founder and CEO of the Comeback America Initiative and contributor to Governing to Win, enhancing national competitiveness through new policy and operating approaches. Dave, with this context, I'd like to transition to see how the U.S. compares with other countries. How does our fiscal position and outlook compare with those of other major nations? Is there any good news?
Well, the only good news is the fact that other countries have successfully addressed their challenges, and if they can do it, we can do it. Countries like Sweden, countries like New Zealand, countries like Australia, countries even like Canada had serious fiscal challenges in the 1990s. They rose to deal with those challenges, and now they're highly ranked, with Australia and New Zealand being number one and number two in the world. Unfortunately, the United States' fiscal position has deteriorated dramatically since 2000, especially since 2003. And when you end up comparing us to other major industrialized nations around the world, of 34 major countries, we're number 28 out of 34, which is embarrassing. And if you do use an apples and apples comparison to compare government debt in the U.S. as compared to European nations, you have to look at federal, state, and local government debt. And if you consider what we owe Social Security and Medicare, the bonds that are in those so-called trust funds that are backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government, you know, our debt position is worse than most of the countries in Europe. In fact, when you consider everything, the only one that's in worse position than us is Greece. And that's not somebody we want to be competing with.
So, David, given little has been done to address these serious issues, would you elaborate on how the biggest deficits the U.S. face are the truth, trust, and leadership deficits? What are your prescriptions for overcoming these non-monetary deficits?
I've experienced too many occasions in my public and private life where people will make assertions that may be technically accurate but grossly misleading. In other situations where they frankly just don't tell the truth. I think that's one of the reasons why trust in government and confidence in the future are at historical low levels. You know, we need much more transparency with regard to where we are, where we're headed, how we compare to others. We need to have much more integrity from our elected and other public officials, and we need to have much more accountability, not just for what they do, but just as importantly, what they fail to do to address large, known, and growing challenges.
Dave, you note that given the size, scope, and nature of the fiscal and debt challenges, everything needs to be on the table. Now, to what extent does the path forward require taking steps designed to return to the principles and values that made America great? And would you elaborate on those specific values and how, taken together, they can provide guidance to Congress and the President?
Well, we do need to return to some of those basic principles and values that made us great. Ones like limited but effective government, individual liberty and opportunity, fiscal responsibility and intergenerational equity, just to name a few. But we also have to make sure, while we must recognize that our current fiscal challenge is not just an economic issue, it's an ethical and moral issue. But how you solve it involves moral questions as well. And when we're coming up with comprehensive solutions that can be successful and sustainable, we need to make sure that they make economic sense, that they're socially equitable, culturally acceptable, that they pass a basic math test, that they're politically feasible, and that they can achieve bipartisan support. Because only by coming up with proposals that meet all of those criteria will you really be successful over time.
Dave, to tackle many of these serious issues that we've discussed today will require a fundamental reassessment of how government works. What makes you believe that the political will exists to make these tough decisions and the requisite pain associated with them?
I think we have to recognize that Washington is a lag indicator and that Congress is a lag indicator within Washington. And therefore, there's an extraordinary amount of importance that has to be placed on the chief executive officer of the United States, namely the President of the United States. The President has to provide the needed leadership here, has to use the bully pulpit to go to the people. The people then have to pressure their elected officials. You know, frankly, I'm shocked and saddened to say that three basic things that it takes for any entity to achieve success, the U.S. government doesn't have. It doesn't have a plan, it doesn't have a budget, and it doesn't have performance metrics. And even when it does have a budget, which it hasn't had in 3 years, it's only controlling 37% of spending. I mean, I can't run my family that way. I can't run my business that way. We shouldn't be running a country that way. And so I do believe that one of the things that we can recognize is if we just basically apply some management 101 principles, we can end up making some major changes that will inure to the benefit of all of our citizens over time.
You point out in your piece, Dave, that tax and regulatory policies must be improved to ensure their certainty, simplicity, and stability. What would this entail, and what are the specific benefits of going in such a direction?
Well, one of the challenges that we have right now that is impeding economic growth is the private sector is the engine of growth, innovation, and job creation. And they don't have any certainty over what our tax and regulatory policies are going to be in the future. You know, we've got all these Bush-Obama tax cuts that are supposed to expire at the end of 2012. We've got a number of pending regulatory actions dealing with financial institutions, healthcare, and other. These are huge factors that impact, you know, economic growth, and business is not likely to make major investments with these types of uncertainties. They've also got trillions of dollars of cash hanging up on their balance sheet domestically. They've got trillions of dollars in offshore earnings that could be repatriated in the U.S. in order to help facilitate growth and jobs here in the U.S. If we ended up coming up with policies that, you know, that made sense and that were certain and that they could plan on and that would achieve a number of other objectives. So the mere fact that we don't have a reasonable degree of certainty has a significant adverse economic effect on investment, on economic growth, on individual opportunity, et cetera.
Dave, as we look to the future, what are the major individual cost drivers of our future fiscal imbalances, and how can we mitigate the effects of these drivers and place the nation on the road to fiscal sanity?
One of the major drivers of our challenges in the future from a fiscal standpoint, meaning tax and spending, would be demographics. In 1950, there were 16 persons working for every person drawing Social Security. Today, it's 3.2 to 1. Within the next 20 years, it's going to go down to 2 to 1 and stay at that level. Secondly, healthcare costs. Healthcare costs are out of control. And while there were a number of provisions in the Affordable Care Act that were designed to try to help mitigate the rise of healthcare costs, it didn't go nearly far enough. In addition, it added on a new healthcare entitlement when the federal government had already made more promises that it can afford to keep to begin with. And so we've got to figure out what are we going to do to reduce the rate of increase in healthcare costs and ultimately get it to the point where healthcare costs are not growing faster than the economy as a whole. Because if there's one thing that can bankrupt the country, it's healthcare. And by the way, we're the only major industrialized nation that doesn't have a budget on what the government spends on health care. Nobody else is dumb enough to do that. And it's time that we learned that we can't either.
Dave, our discussion in your piece in the book painted an interesting picture of U.S. competitiveness. To what extent has our discussion and your piece been a call for action rather than one of despair?
Look, there's no question that the United States is a great nation, arguably the greatest in the history of mankind. But we've got some serious challenges. We have strayed from the principles and values that made us great. We do face a range of key sustainability challenges that threaten our future position in the world and our future standard of living at home. But it's not too late. If we learn from history, if we learn from others, if our leaders start leading, especially the President of the United States, who's the chief executive officer, whoever that might be, if the people, we the people, start putting pressure on our elected officials to act, to address large and known and growing problems before they reach a crisis, if we make the political price of doing nothing greater than the political price of making tough choices that involve some, you know, shared sacrifice today in order to help create a much better tomorrow, then we'll all be better off. I believe that can happen. I believe that needs to happen in 2013, and all of us have a role to play in helping to make sure that it does.
David, I'd like to switch gears a bit. Would you tell us more about the Comeback America Initiative?
Well, the Comeback America Initiative is a nonprofit that is nonpartisan and non-ideological that seeks to educate and engage the American people on the facts, the truth, the tough choices, on sensible and nonpartisan solutions that can help achieve bipartisan consensus. We are focused primarily on federal fiscal challenges, but we also deal with some state and local challenges, in particular underfunded pensions, unfunded retiree health care, and outdated tax systems. We are based in Bridgeport, Connecticut, although our reach is national and even international because we do a lot of comparative analysis in comparing the U.S. to other countries as well, because that's an important dimension. And we are focused on 2012 and trying to help make sure that the 2012 election will focus on the economy, jobs, and fiscal responsibility, and that candidates, especially the major candidates for president, have to focus on these issues in a substantive and solutions-oriented fashion so that the American people can make an informed choice about who to support and so that whoever wins will have some type of a mandate to act, because we must act in 2013.
Dave, I'd like to talk more about your critically acclaimed documentary, IOUSA. Would you highlight some of the key points made in the documentary? And more importantly, how did you come up with the concept?
Well, IOUSA was released in 2008, right before the fiscal crisis or the financial crisis. And quite frankly, I think if it had been released a year later, it probably would have won the Academy Award. But nonetheless, it achieved critical acclaim and, you know, focused on a range of deficits that we have, including our fiscal deficit and our leadership deficit. You know, it resonated with audiences then, and, you know, I'd like to say that we're in better shape today than we were in 2008, but that wouldn't be true. The fact is we're in much worse shape, and we're losing ground critically. In fact, if you look at where we stand today versus 20 years ago, when Ross Perot first ran for president, you will find that the issues of fiscal responsibility, political dysfunctionality, declining trust in government, and declining confidence in the future are even bigger issues today than they were then. And the percentage of Americans that are political independents like myself is 40 to 42% versus 20 to 22% 20 years ago. Those are dramatic changes, and I think we'll end up having profound consequences on our political system over time.
So, Dave, to wrap up our conversation today, what does the future hold? And more importantly, what are some of the immediate next steps that can be taken in this area?
I believe that our future can be better than our past, but that the decisions that are made or that fail to be made by elected officials within the next 3 to 5 years will largely determine whether our collective future is better than our past. We're at a critical crossroads. We're approaching a tipping point. Our elected officials have not learned from history. They're not learning from others. And I take hope in the fact that we've always risen to meet a challenge historically. I think we'll do so again this time. But we need to do it before we have a U.S. debt crisis, which would have devastating consequences, not just here at home, but around the world. And for that to happen, as I said, two things need to occur. One, the president, whoever it is, has to demonstrate extraordinary leadership. Talk about the challenges, the opportunities, a way forward. Use the bully pulpit to go directly to the American people. And then the American people have to put pressure on their elected officials to act in our common interest in order to help ensure that our future will be better than our past. I think that can happen. I hope that it will happen. And 2013 is key.
I want to thank both of my guests today, Chuck Proh, editor of the recent IBM Center book, Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, and David Walker, founder and CEO of the Comeback America Initiative and contributor to Governing to Win. The book is available at bookstores, online booksellers, and the publisher at romanlittlefield.com. This has been a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win, Exploring Ideas to Enhancing National Competitiveness. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.